Welcome to another edition of El Paso Primetime. I'm Dennis Wu, sitting in for the rest of the band. Seems like I've always been sitting in for the rest of the band for the whole year, but you know what? They've all been working on projects for the summer, which is a good thing.
You're a lone wolf.
That would be me. Actually, I used to be known as a lone eagle, but we'll get into that later. Anyway, with us this afternoon, Laura Cruz Acosta from Sun Metro and Margaret Schroeder. Margaret, what department are you with now?
I'm with Engineering and Construction Management.
Great. There's a real important reason why you're here, and so let's just get launched right on into this, Margaret. Let's talk about this.
Sun Metro is getting ready with the Department of Engineering is getting ready to start construction on the Mesa Rapid Transit System, also known as the Sun Metro BRIO, B-R-I-O. And we're really excited about this. This construction is going to start at the end of May, early June. And we're actually getting ready to host a couple of public meetings where the community is invited to come out and learn more about the details with regards to the construction project and the overall project for the rapid transit system.
Let's take a peek into these two components, the overall look of the rapid transit system and the impact it'll give the city. And then let's talk about the these town hall meetings and where they will be. But first off, let's talk about the overall, what this will provide to the city.
So overall, the rapid transit system is meant to imitate a light rail system. So for this, for the Mesa corridor, there'll be 22 stations. And the stations will feature canopies, raised platforms, ticket vending machines. So the idea is to make it faster and to imitate light rail. So when an articulated vehicle pulls up at a station, people already have bought their tickets. They don't have to fumble around to pay put the money in the ticket machine or get a ticket. They just go right on board. There's a raised platform, and so it's easier to get on board. You don't have to step up onto the bus. It's all meant to be a lot smoother and faster. The stations are a little bit farther apart. They're about a mile apart. But overall, again, it imitates a light rail system, and the corridor itself is about 8 miles long. Hopefully, we'll be able to provide faster service to more people.
One of the unique things, if I can add to what Margaret's saying about this all, is the intersections along the routes is that they're going to have prioritized signals. So when the articulated vehicle approaches an intersection, it has a technology that it'll communicate, so to speak, with the traffic signal. And it'll extend a green light or shorten a red light. It won't be able to change it like the police department or the fire department or the EMS, but it'll be able to extend a green light and shorten a red light.
Oh, that's exciting.
So that speeds up the process.
So we're talking an 8 mile route to and from. Mm-hmm. So it would start where?
It starts at the downtown transit center down at Santa Fe and 4th. And then it continues up Santa Fe to Franklin. Right by the library, it turns right on Franklin and goes up Oregon. And so all the way up Oregon to Glory Road, and then right on Glory Road and up Mesa out to the West Side Transit Terminal.
Oh, my gosh. That's really exciting.
It's very exciting. It's going to be a complete change in the service that we provide. Of course, our existing service will continue on as is with a few modifications here and there. But for the most part, it's supposed to be a much faster service to get in and out of extended areas. We're also looking at Alameda right now as well to come online. But the first one to start seeing the construction is Mesa.
Well, this is, again, I don't mean to sound like a broken record, but this is really exciting because it adds to the commute to and from the West Side. The 14 and the 15 won't be compromised for folks coming in from the West Side in if they want to take a longer route.
Mm-hmm.
As far as I can see, the buses, the number 10 and the number 11 feeding Mesita and Sunset Heights wouldn't be totally affected either. That
Correct.
Would probably help those situations out even more.
Correct.
Plus, the commuters on Mesa will see lighter traffic eventually because of this light rail system.
That's the hope. That's definitely the hope. We want more people to look at, especially those individuals who are actually on Mesa, to consider, hey, you know what? I don't need to be in my vehicle during the work week. I could potentially do park and ride, where they can park at the West Side Terminal and board very quickly the Brio Mesa corridor to the downtown area and get to work if they work in the downtown area.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually, one of the things that we're looking at is doing the same type of service along Alameda, as we've mentioned. That one will come online. And hopefully, Dyer and Montana, once the funding is secured from the Federal Transit Administration, we'll see this similar type of service along those areas.
That's absolutely wonderful. Now, let's get down to the second part of this. That would be the town hall meetings, so that you get community input.
Correct. And the first one is supposed to go on May 6th, which is Monday, and it'll be from 6 to 7 o'clock. I'm sorry, 5:30 to 6 to I'm
That's
getting
okay.
my dates confused. It's going to be – there's two. It's back-to-back. It's on May 6th. It's going to be at Mesita Elementary School, and it's going to start at 5:30, and it's going to be for 2 hours, so until 7:30 at Mesita Elementary School. And then the next one will be on Tuesday, May 7th, and that's going to be at Moorhead Middle School, and that one is going to be from 6 p.m. until 8 p.m. in the cafeterias, both locations. And so – Margaret's going to be taking the lead on those, talking about the construction.
The construction end of this, of course, there will be some minor inconveniences all along this 8-mile route, but it's nothing more than what the folks along Alameda have been contending with in their reconstruction, no?
Right. I think it'll be significantly less than that, hopefully. Just because really what it involves in the street is just constructing the bus pads. So we will have to do some lane closures, but it will just be at isolated sections along the street, along the route. So the stations are a mile apart. So just, you know, you're not going to see like an extended lane closure. It'll just, and we're requiring the contractor not to do consecutive stations. And so you'll see intermittent lane closures along the route, but just while they're constructing the bus pad and the bus platform there.
To me, it makes a lot of sense. In the 2 years now that I've not been with Wheels, so to speak, and have been taking Sun Metro, I'm actually finding a lot more peace of mind and a lot more money in my pocket, actually. I'm not spending on gas. I'm not spending on insurance. I'm not saying that those two are bad, but I'm saying that, you know, all of a sudden now my productivity in trying to figure out how to do stuff has really gone through the roof. You know, I have time for myself on the bus. I have time to work on things to work and on the way back. I can even edit stuff on a computer in the bus. So that's a nice thing.
And, you know, if I can, one of the really exciting things, the other exciting thing about the RTS of Brio is that we're going to be offering free Wi-Fi at the stations and on the bus. So if your job requires you to be connected to some kind of network platform, you can still maintain that connectivity.
That's nice. The light rail system from start to finish would take about approximately how long to complete?
Oh, to complete? The construction time is a year.
About a year. Okay. Now, when this goes online, when I take a bus, the light rail system or the Brio, when I take that from downtown to the west side, how long do you think that would take in terms of commute time?
Oh, the commute time. I think it's about a little under 25 minutes.
About that.
Yeah, it's a little under 25 minutes. It's pretty short distance, considering if you were to take that right now in your own personal vehicle and actually follow the speed limit, you would actually make it in about 30.
In about 40 minutes, from downtown to,
So theoretically, it should be the same time that it takes a personal vehicle in the Brio. And then the other thing that we are looking at is the service frequency would be every 10 minutes during peak hours, which are from about 6 a.m. till about, let's say, 9 o'clock or around that time. And then during non-peak hours, they're running every 15 minutes, these vehicles. And it's those really unique vehicles that have an accordion in the middle. They're about 60 feet long, extra long.
Right.
And so we've ordered our first batch of buses. We're very excited. We should be seeing a training bus here in December. We're very excited.
Oh, I'm excited for this whole thing, for the whole community. You know, everybody talks about a quality of life. We're talking about a AAA ball team. We're talking about a baseball field. We're talking about a whole lot of stuff. People don't realize, and people should be hip to this one thing that I'm thinking about right now. Taking the Brio from the west side to downtown and walking to the baseball park sounds like such a great idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
You know what I'm saying here? I mean, really and truly, think about it. Big picture, quality of life. Now we've gotten into the area of Chicago, mm-hmm. Miami, places where we have light rail. How long has this been coming along?
It's been in the works for several years, for I would say since 2008.
That's right.
So it's been a long process because there's so many steps that we need to take with the Federal Transit Administration dollars, with the president's budgets. It's so many things, so many pieces to the puzzle in order to make this happen. So it's very exciting.
It truly is. You know, I don't mean to step on you, but I'm just really just jazzed about this whole thing. This is really cool. So let's talk again. These two town hall meetings are coming up again at what day?
It's on Monday, the May 6th, from 5:30 to 7:30 at Mesita Elementary School, and then Tuesday, May the 7th, from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. at Moorhead Middle School. And we chose these schools because they're on the corridor and they service the areas that we're hoping to really get input from the public on. And if you can't attend these, any of these, you know, you can always call our customer service line, 533-3333, and give us your insight. Just let the customer service staff know, hey, I want to give you my insight. Can you write it down? This is what I think. It's awesome.
This is great. So you've got all those dates, and if you missed them all, they'll be up on our website along with the archive of this particular segment of El Paso Primetime. Oh, boy, this is great. Margaret Schroeder, Laura Cruz Acosta, thank you so much for coming in and updating us on stuff. Again, mi casa su casa. So whenever something comes up and you need to get it on the air, please let us know. We'd love to have you back.
Thanks, Thomas.
And again, the information on those two town hall meetings will be up on our website under El Paso Primetime on KTEP.org. Time now for Movies for Grownups from the AARP. Here's Bill Newcott.
Suddenly, it's Saturday afternoon all over again. I'm Bill Newcott, and this is AARP's Movies for Grownups.
Are you still there?
A fiery horse with the speed of light, a cloud of dust, and a hearty Hi-Yo Silver. The Lone Ranger.
Everyone knows that classic TV opening, and if you're lucky enough to be old enough, you remember lying on your living room floor, chin in your hands, watching Clayton Moore and Jay Silverheels battle bad guys every Saturday afternoon. The Lone Ranger is one of 14 classic Western series included in a new DVD set, Howdy Kids, a Saturday afternoon Western roundup. Besides The Lone Ranger, no collection would be complete without
The Roy Rogers Show. Starring Roy Rogers, King of the Cowboys, Trigger, his Golden Palomino, and Dale Evans, Queen of the West.
And then there are some classic Western heroes I hadn't even thought about in decades.
Out of the clear blue of the Western sky comes Sky King.
Remember Sky King flying his Cessna over the desert in search of villains? And how about the guy who seemed to love the snow almost as much as he loved his dog?
Sergeant Preston of the Northwest Mounted Police with Yukon King, swiftest and strongest lead dog breaking the trail in the relentless pursuit of lawbreakers in the wild days of the Yukon.
You know, there are those who insist the 1960s feminist movement was partly inspired by the Saturday Western that featured a heroine who could do it all without apology.
With her hard riding, straight shooting, and suspense.
Here
here's adventure. Here's romance. Here's O. Henry's famous Robin Hood of the Old West, the Cisco Kid.
Not only was the Cisco Kid the first TV series filmed in color, it was also the first to feature two Hispanic characters, Cisco and his sidekick Pancho. The Howdy Kids collection is on sale now. I'm Bill Newcott.
Till we meet again.
Good afternoon, I'm Louis Sines, and joining us today is Ken Hudnall. Ken is a student and soon to be graduate student. He's also a well-known author, also host of an internet radio show, and also ghost story tour guide. Today we're going to talk about an interesting new adventure that Ken has gotten himself into, and it's called El Paso, A City of Secrets. Ken, thank you very much for being with us here today.
No, you're quite welcome.
So tell us about this latest secret.
Well, in 1881, the railroad came to El Paso, and they brought with them 1,221 Chinese workers. Got them together in the railroad yard, told them what a wonderful job they'd done, the fact they were helping to achieve the American dream, and fired them all. About half of them left for other places in the country, usually New York or San Francisco. But between 500 and 600 stayed here in El Paso and created El Paso's Chinatown, which began at the Mills Building and went south for about four blocks. And they were very industrious. In fact, at one point, they controlled 75% of the fresh fruits and vegetables for restaurants in El Paso. They were really building financial stability for themselves, which made a lot of people angry. And there were a lot of complaints, and in May of 1882, Congress passed the Chinese Exclusion Act. Said Chinese couldn't come to this country. If they were here, they could stay. If they left, they couldn't come back, and no Chinese could become citizens. That was supposed to be for 10 years. Instead, it stayed in effect until 1943. But the people of El Paso and Juarez reacted to that law as they react to everything that gets outlawed. They started smuggling Chinese into El Paso. And in fact, at one point, it became the largest smuggling ring of Chinese immigrants in the world. And they came in through, according to legend, a series of tunnels that's underneath El Paso. In fact, that tunnel system is supposed to be about 900 miles in extent. And over half the old buildings in town are connected to the tunnel system. Many of them have sub-basements even the current owners don't know about. Well, in an area around Main and Octavia, there was an entrance to what was literally an underground city the Chinese had built. Many of them were, there was such a discrimination against them. They didn't want to live any place except where they felt protected, and they felt protected underneath the city. And many, according to a lot of people I've talked to, until the late 1970s, there were Chinese people living in those houses within the tunnels. And I'm trying to find the location of the underground city, which is not as easy as you might think. Even though I found records of many entrances, I have found each one of them has been sealed off.
As far as what you've heard, what people have told you, have you gone to look at public records? Have you gone and talked to perhaps some people of Chinese descendants? There's still a lot of Chinese people here in El Paso, mm-hmm. not as many as used to be. But have you talked to them? Have you looked at records that might be somewhere else besides El Paso, et cetera, Chinese society, et cetera?
I've gone to all the records depositories here, and I found a good bit of information. In fact, there were two theses done regarding Chinese in El Paso, and I found copies of those and used a lot of the, gone to a lot of the sources that they quote. Additionally, I have of course, gone to the local historians, such as Leon Metz. And the Chinese in El Paso, he's the first to say, yes, it was quite a presence at one point in time. However, he and many others say the tunnels that run underneath the Rio Grande into Juarez are just a myth. Now, I've been in those myths, and they look pretty solid to me. In fact, one individual gave me a tour, and we wound up in Juarez accidentally. Part of the problem is that since they were not exactly well-received when they started becoming financially independent, a lot of records seem almost to have been erased that would give me information about many of the achievements and such as the Underground City, which that entire area now seems to be underneath the railroad yard. I've talked to Southern Pacific, which is has merged with another railroad. I talked to their public affairs department, and they say they've heard stories, but they have no reason to believe that they're true. And at least to this point in time, they've not allowed me to explore inside the railroad yard. Though many workers who've been there for years tell me that there are passageways that go under some of the very oldest buildings, and they have no idea where they come out.
Well, the area that you went into, Ken, you said a friend of yours took you into, and you eventually ended up in Juarez. What did you see there? Was it just plainly just a tunnel that you walk through, perhaps like some of the drains that you go through in the big cities underground? What did you see?
It appeared part of it was hand dug, no question about that. It was reinforced with railroad ties and what appeared to be sections of track. Some of it looked like it was storm drains that had been entered into. And when it got, you could almost tell where the border was in hindsight. Now, we didn't know we were – it's like a freeway. If you take the wrong turn, you're going to wind up going places you don't expect. We didn't plan on going to Juarez. But in hindsight, there was no question there was a distinct change in the way that the tunnel appeared when we crossed the border. Now, many people say there can't be tunnels underneath the Rio Grande because of the concrete base to it. But some of these tunnels are as old as 1850 and some even older. Now, I've come across two or three news stories that were done about the tunnels, and they concur that we're talking about a massive system. I've been underneath El Paso High School, and if you want to crawl underneath the air conditioning system, the tunnels that are underneath the school do continue. I don't know anyone who has thoroughly explored them.
I'll play a devil's advocate here, Ken, and say what makes you think that these are not just tunnels, and what makes them unique to be Chinese tunnels or underground
cities? Well, in 1996, the historical preservation officer for the city of El Paso gave an interview where he talked about the fact that street crews were routinely breaking into the old Chinese tunnels that run underneath downtown. Quite a number of other official records that talk about the fact we're dealing with a lot of Chinese tunnels. Now, that's not the only tunnels that are down there, but that's those of the largest extent. In Chinatown, El Paso's Chinatown, many of the houses were built with the idea of being able to move people in and out through underground tunnels and hidden rooms, because even though everybody knew the smuggling was going on of Chinese immigrants, officially, of course, it was outlawed, and we did have law enforcement authorities in El Paso trying their best to stop it.
Now, as your project continues, and because most people who are familiar with your work know that you've produced, authored several books on ghost stories, you know, tales of the Southwest, etc., and obviously this is another area that you're going to explore. And tell us a little bit about what you plan to do with this as far as how much further do you expect to go? Are you planning to take videos if you haven't even already taken videos, photographs, and perhaps even share them with people who might have lived in El Paso a while back and moved to San Francisco or other parts of the world where some of these Chinese immigrants left?
Well, I plan on mapping as much of the system as humanly possible. I've got reports of the tunnel system going as far as Horizon City. In fact, the tunnels are actually tied with the stories of the Horizon City monster. There's quite a number of things that I found in researching my history and mystery series that ties in to the Chinese tunnel system. And as for making videos, I've already made 3 short ones, more trailers than anything else. But I plan on doing a series of 1-hour-long videos, mapping as much of it as I can. And there's a lot of things that I've had people laugh at me and say, well, for example, the Turtle House. There's been stories about tunnels, and there's been stories saying that all that's myth. Well, I was allowed to go under the Turtle House, and it's not myth. That is, I guess I would call it a way station, because a series of archways showed that tunnels came into that area. They've all been blocked off permanently but one, and that one is a large brick archway that is sealed with a concrete block.
Now, for those of you who are listening and are wondering about Ken Hudnall, these are the type of books that he writes. And he writes about conspiracies. He writes about ghost stories. He writes about different events that have happened. And you said something a little while ago that I'm sure our listeners are going, what? And you mentioned the Horizon City Monster. Talk
yes.
about what's that?
Back in the 60s and 70s, there were stories of a creature being seen in Horizon City, and it was called the Horizon City Monster. The description matches the descriptions we have of, well, call him Sasquatch, our version of the Abominable
Bigfoot.
Snowman, Bigfoot. And near where he was seen each time, there is a large cave that at one point, and perhaps it still does, we haven't been able to explore far enough to find out, actually gave into the tunnel system. Now, is it the same tunnel system that's under El Paso? Many of us believe it is, but we don't have definitive proof. However, the story of the Horizon City Monster, I wrote about it in great detail.
In what book is that?
The History and Mystery of the Rio Grande, which is the second book I did on the history and mystery of El Paso.
Okay, as we're wrapping up the program, and I believe this program is going to air after Christmas, or after the holidays. But during the holidays and after the holidays are when people do most of their holiday shopping anyway, because that's when the deals are.
That's right.
But there are a lot of books out there that you've written, and if they're interested in finding out some of those books or even videos, do you have a website, or should they go to the local bookstores?
Well, the local bookstores have many of my titles, Barnes & Noble. Many of my books are there. I'll be doing a book signing at the UTEP bookstore January 16th at 1 o'clock. And I'll have not only the books about the history and mystery of the area, I'll have the only history ever done about the Sun Bowl, back to the very first game, everybody ever involved in it. Or they can go to Ken Hudnall, KenHudnall.com. I have a store there where they can buy and pay through PayPal.
Okay. Ken, thank you very much for being with us here today. We've been visiting with Ken Hudnall. And as I mentioned, Ken is one of our students and soon-to-be graduate students. And the book that you talked about, the Rio Grande, is called what?
The History and Mystery of the Rio Grande.
History and Mystery of the Rio Grande.
Louis Sines' interview with Ken Hudnall happened earlier this year in January. Histories and Mysteries of the Rio Grande is now available at a local bookstore. El Paso Primetime is a production of KTEP, all rights reserved by KTEP. We'll take the time here to also thank you for your pledge and support for making our spring membership campaign a very successful one. Up next, Louis Sines returns with Perspectives. Have a great weekend. We'll see you next week for El Paso Primetime.